Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Governor Evers signs Wisconsin's biennial budget and exercises his broad veto power. National Guard troops are deployed to the southern U.S. border, and we preview the 37th Assembly District special election set for July 13th. Rewind, your week in review for July 9th.
I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Patrick Marley.
And welcome to Rewind, your week in review for the week of July 9th. Patrick, the budget, I guess, is our version of the World Series, right? Because it's
sure.
A long, long process, seven games. So the seventh game was finished yesterday. Governor signs the budget. Let's talk about a couple highlights. $2 million income tax cut, 50 partial vetoes, the fewest since 2011. $700 million in change of holding tables were nixed, along with a $550 million transfer to the rainy day fund. The governor said this budget wasn't good enough, but he wasn't going to risk losing federal aid to schools, about $2.3 billion or so, and also said he's going to take $100 million from the ARPA money available to him and redirect it to schools. So my question is, were you surprised he signed it? Are you surprised he signed the tax cut?
I was not surprised that he signed the budget. I thought he would sign some kind of budget. I was surprised that the vetoes were as restrained as they were, and I think that's a function in part from the Supreme Court decision a year ago that limited his powers there. I thought he might find a way to get creative. He didn't really seem to. On the tax cut, I guess I thought he was going to sign it because he didn't seem to have an option to narrow it. You know, I think he would have preferred an income tax cut that was more specifically targeted to the middle class. This has upper income people who benefit quite a bit. But absent a way to do it, I guess I wasn't totally shocked. The Republicans seemed to be. What did you think he was going to do on the income tax?
I always got the impression after the budget was finished by the legislature that he was going to sign it. He'd look at it. Now, remember, so we're, people at home, we're talking about taking a bracket at 6.27% down to 5.3. As I understand it, his options were to sign the entire thing, veto it, or cross out the 5 or the 3.
Right. But either of those make it, you know,
bigger.
In a way that he wouldn't like. It doesn't take it in a direction that he would
and
want.
And it benefits those who are in the upper end of that spectrum
right.
more generously. So I got the impression he was going to sign it. Republicans, I think, at least some of them made a bet that he wouldn't because they left a lot of money in the till, which some Republicans told me they felt like it was a mistake because there was a thought among some Republicans that if they made a tax cut, that third bracket, which does cover income from around $26,000 to $260,000,
huge range,
that it really starts to skew toward those upper middle income voters, that his base wouldn't allow him to sign that tax cut and that they would corner him, he would veto it, and they'd hang around his neck next fall and run against him on it. The counter thought from some Republicans was, we just want to get a tax cut done. We don't want to mess around the politics of this. We want to cut taxes. We have unprecedented revenue growth going on. It will likely never happen again. Get it done. And the way they did it, with leaving the money in the general fund that was there, gave Governor a lot of options. So remember, let's talk about this rainy day fund transfer. We were already talking about $400 million or so left in the general fund as a cushion by the GOP budget. The withholding table changes, he vetoed that $700 million. Now you're talking $1.1 billion. The $550 million transfer, now we're talking north of $1.6 billion. Just depends the final accounting by Fiscal Bureau about what's there. That is a cushion I've never seen in a budget.
I mean, it's a ton of cash sitting there. I would say the practical effect of vetoing the rainy day fund isn't that big a deal because essentially it's a savings account.
Yes.
It's sitting in one savings account instead of another. But the fact is this budget has a giant tax cut and then it's got still a lot of money sitting there in reserve in case, you know, revenue isn't as good as it's been projected or in case the governor and lawmakers want to spend more money.
Now, Evers is going to go out there and campaign and prod Republicans to spend more money on schools because it wasn't enough. I don't think they're going to be very willing on that front.
Right.
There's this really deep in the weeds issue to kind of keep an eye on. We talked a lot during the budget about maintenance of effort, which
right.
basically, as the Fed said, to qualify for all this federal money, you have to maintain your share of spending on K-12 and higher ed, get this K-12 money. There's a new, well, it's not really new, but it didn't get a lot of attention. It's called maintenance of equity. And basically, your high poverty districts, you have to keep your state share of spending toward them, period.
Right.
Well, here's some complicating factors. We got to run the numbers from the Department of Public Instruction last week of like their estimate, right, for October. Right. We won't know for sure until October how much money the schools are going to get. Also, it takes into account categorical aids, which we don't know until they're paid in the fall and the spring. We won't know until spring of next year if we met that standard with these poorest of the poor schools, essentially. And then you got to ask, what are the feds going to do? Because this is a reimbursement program. So under the ARPA funds and the right. CARES Act, you spend money that qualifies for this money. You then apply for reimbursement. You get it. Would the feds really go to Milwaukee and say we're taking back X million dollars because right. Wisconsin failed to meet the standard for a dozen districts? I don't know. Republicans are kind of betting no. But keep right. an eye on that. That might be something that pops up. But Evers is now, I think one of the complaints Republicans I heard was that they gave him a tax cut he could sign while also leaving so much money in the till that he could do things like call for more education yes. spending. If they had did a bigger tax cut, made it even more tilted toward the wealthy, or even like touched the third rail of taxes, the upper income bracket, which is still among the 10 highest in the country, 7.65% I think it right. is, maybe then they could have forced him to veto it. But now, potentially, Evers can campaign on huge investments in education and billions in tax cuts.
I mean, he made clear yesterday he's going to campaign on that. I mean, he sort of stole the campaign playbook of the Republicans by signing this budget. He can go out there and say, I did this big tax cut. He's going to focus on the middle class, which is something he talked about in his initial run for governor, that he was going to cut income tax for the middle class by 10%. He can say he's done that. And then he can beat up lawmakers on their school spending, say it's not enough, and then he's going to point to these funds sitting there in the state saying, we've got this money, we should be spending it on schools.
Yeah. Evers' three challenges are how he handled the Kenosha riots, the unemployment insurance debacle yep. during the pandemic, and the headwinds of Biden in the White House. The party in power of the White House has struggled in Wisconsin in the midterms yes. for years. His pluses are going to be income tax cuts, big tax cuts. He's going to consult the adult in the room, say, look, these guys don't want to do all these crazy things. I'm the backstop, so Democratic base, you got to be excited for me. COVID looks like it's a net positive right now, but we'll see yeah. how things play out.
And I think related to that is he gets a huge win by all this federal money coming into the state because he gets to spend it. The Republicans in the legislature have been able to block him at every turn. His agenda has really been stymied by them. But now he's got all this money, and he can say, I don't need to work with lawmakers. I'm just spending it on broadband. I mean, he said he's going to give an extra $100 million to schools. He's handing out money to all kinds of businesses that were affected by COVID. This gets him a lot of goodwill. This gets him a lot of local headlines. It's really changed the game, I think, in terms of how you have to think about the reelection campaign.
Oh, and just this week, to your point, they changed one program to now cover broadband, basically payments, you know, so make sure you have access to broadband.
Right.
Dewey Strobel, Republican from Saukville, so this is a slush fund. Maybe it's a harsh word for it, but it is generally a benefit for him seeking re-election to have this money
yep.
to hand out. I mean, you can't deny that he's... Now, one Republican I talked to even like went as far as say, we worry we just guaranteed his re-election next fall. Now, I remember when Foxconn was signed, and Republicans told me that this was a grand slam for Scott Walker. He had sealed the deal in 2018. That obviously didn't come out to right. bear. And nobody saw... COVID. The lawsuit over Obamacare in 28 becoming the issue of 2018.
Right.
So who knows what the issue is going to be in 2022, but these things seem to have helped the governor in some, if he can message it correctly between now and next fall.
Yeah, I mean, the election's a year and a half away, so it's a million unpredictable things Absolutely. Can and will happen. But you're right. At the moment, he looks in, like he's in a pretty good spot, given that 22 is going to be a tough year for Democrats given national trends.
Yeah. Well, we got some video from the governor's news conference this week as he signed the budget. Also from Mark Bourne, the assembly co-chair of the Finance Committee, reacting to these on the governor's comments. Let's watch that now.
I propose in my 2021 budget or 21-23 budget, our Badger bounce back agenda, providing a blueprint to not only get our economy back on track to normal, but to ensure that we could bounce back better than before this pandemic hit. So this morning, I exercised my broad constitutional authority to improve the budget that was sent to me, and I am signing Assembly Bill 68, making it Wisconsin Act 58. The biggest problems with the budget are not the things that need to be removed by a stroke of a pen, but rather the work the legislature has left undone. My actions today will improve this document and leave resources available to ensure that the unfinished business can be addressed including meaningfully investing in our kids and our schools. They could have done the right thing. They still can do the right thing. There's work to be done for these kids. There's work to be done around criminal justice reform, a whole number of areas. The money is still there. The money is still there.
Once again, Republicans are leading. The legislature have led the way, sent Governor Evers a common sense budget that invests in priorities and puts money back in the hands of families of Wisconsin. Personally, I find it laughable and hypocritical that just 6 months ago, when Governor Evers introduced his budget and he proposed an over $1 billion tax increase, well, the governor today takes credit for the historic tax cut that the Republican legislature delivered to his desk. He still couldn't resist keeping more money for government. He vetoes the updates to the tax withholding tables that takes money out of people's paychecks and keeps it instead with the government. At the end of the day, we're pleased the governor was forced to sign a reasonable, responsible, and realistic budget. This was an opportunity he couldn't pass up. I'm proud of the work my Republican colleagues and I did to get it to his desk. Why it matters is it's not his money. It's the taxpayers' money, and he's taking it, for free, you know, a loan, no interest, and sitting on it when it's the people of Wisconsin's money. Return it to them. That's just good tax policy. It's better for our gap deficit to do that as well. And so it's the right thing to do. It's something that normally the Department of Revenue does routinely when there's been tax changes. And that's part of why we include it in the budget. It's the people's money. Just give it back to them. It's not that difficult.
All right. And for those budget geeks at home, we've had 9 budgets in Wisconsin with 0 partial vetoes. The last one's in 1967. The most partial vetoes in a budget, Tommy Thompson, 1991, with more than 450. So it gives some perspective on the 50 that Governor Evers did. And speaking of vetoes, Patrick, were you surprised he vetoed the personal property tax bill, the repeal of the personal property tax?
I don't know if I was surprised. I wasn't sure quite what he was going to do on that. It is a tax that, you know, this is the tax on equipment and furniture that businesses pay and that businesses don't like, particularly because the compliance efforts are onerous. At least they view it that way. So there's a lot of small businesses that don't like it, and you would think the governor would want to help them. But also, from the start, he had concerns about the way this bill was put together and how fast it was moving. They did get last-minute changes to the bill that were what Evers wanted, or at least moved in the direction that Evers wanted. So I thought that increased the chances that he would sign it. But he said he still had concerns and vetoed it.
Yeah, to underscore your part about the how quickly it moved, both versions of the bill were introduced in March in each house. They've been introduced for years and years and years. They didn't get anything in terms of a public hearing until after the new revenue numbers came out with the additional $4.4 billion. They started moving so quickly that they were in a committee that Dale Cayenga was gone. They moved it from his committee to another committee to get that bill out of committee in the Senate. But to your comment about the speed at which it moved, there were concerns that Evers administration raised. The two big fronts they talked about were the impact on railroads and impact the manufacturing ag credit. Can you kind of explain to me like what?
Sure. So the railroad issue was that railroads don't pay a personal property tax, but they pay something that's similar to it through their utility tax. And there's a federal law that says you can't treat railroads differently than other businesses. So although the price tag on this bill was $200 million, it quickly became apparent that the railroads could easily sue and claim you'd get this an equivalent tax cut. So it was really more like a $245 million cut. So there really wasn't anything that could be done about that, but it was inevitable that the price tag was going to be higher than originally advertised. The manufacturing and agricultural tax credit is paid is a break that businesses get so that it almost zeroes out their income tax liabilities. And they don't have to pay the income for their operations and things that are affiliated with it that are nearby. So if you have a factory, it doesn't pay income tax. If you have a warehouse on site, you don't pay taxes on that warehouse. They got rid of the language that said it has to be right there, so you could have a warehouse in Wisconsin and a factory in Mexico, and they were concerned that suddenly the warehouse in Wisconsin that is very disassociated from that factory would get a tax break. Now, they did put in language that Republicans said resolved that issue. Evers says he still sees it as something that could happen where you'd have these things that we don't think of as agriculture or manufacturing suddenly being able to get big tax breaks.
Yeah, and you've got to note that the money is still there to backfill the loss of local property taxes in the budget. $202 million in change still there. The governor says, look, the money's there. I want to do this. Mm-hmm. The question is, will they give him a second bill? Because much like we talked about with the governor signing this tax cut, an income tax cut in the budget, you would be giving him another political win, possibly,
right,
with signing a business tax cut. Let's be honest. The general WMCs of the world are not big fans of Governor Evers' policies.
Correct.
For the small businesses of Wisconsin. But if you have something like this, does that change the dynamic for him with some Main Street business folks? You say, you know, and then it's not that bad. So that's the question. Would they risk giving him another quote-unquote win with a different bill that comes closer to what he wants? You also have some Republicans that are so obsessed with getting rid of this tax, they don't care about the dynamic of what this might mean for Evers in 2022. They only care about, we have the money, get rid of it now before the money goes away.
I mean, I think the one takeaway is that tax does not seem long for this world, because it could still get introduced yet this session and have Evers sign it. Or, you know, next session, it's going to come back in some fashion. And Evers has now shown this receptiveness to it. So, you know, and at that point, he'd be at the start of a new four-year term. So Republicans would be open to working with him on it. Or you'd have a new Republican governor who would definitely sign it, because it's a little surprising that this tax is still around after 8 years of Scott Walker and Republican control of the legislature.
So we'll talk about the governor said about this, and we got Mark Born again, some video of their kind of thoughts about whether they'll come back into their bill that the governor would possibly sign or repeal this personal property tax. Let's look at that now.
That bill will be vetoed. You know, I'm for it. It's just that it's a bad bill. We anticipate the legislature coming back in session to take care of that personal property tax issue. They didn't deal with whether manufacturing costs out of state is taxable or not. And if we end up in court and we lose that, where does that money come from? It was done in such a rush that we're having problems. We had problems with it.
I think that the legislature has been interested in getting rid of the personal property tax for a couple of decades. I'm sure we'll be continuing to be interested in that. I don't know what the governor means by compromise. If it's, you know, not accomplishing the actual goal, then no, we wouldn't be interested. But I'm sure we'll see legislation either later in this session or in future sessions to continue to get rid of that antiquated tax.
All right, Patrick, so non-budget news, the National Guard's going to the border,
yes,
southern border. So remember, let's backstory. February of 2019, Governor Evers withdrew about 112 troops from the National Guard from Arizona, arguing there wasn't a reason for them to be there. This is at the height of President Trump arguing about the crisis at the border, what needed to be done. Fast forward to this year, we've had Reps August and Steinicke visiting the border, calling on Evers to send troops. We've had U.S. Rep. Scott Fitzgerald, former Senate Majority Leader of the state's legislature, tweeting concerns about what's going on there, calling Evers to do stuff. Now we have Biden ordering the troops to the border, about 125 of them. What I don't know, Patrick, is this is for a non-law enforcement action.
Right.
What does that mean? Because the Republican complaint is there's a drug issue down there. We need to be watching traffic. There needs to be a law enforcement presence on the border. These guard troops aren't going to be part of a law enforcement action. So I'm not quite sure how to take or interpret what's going on with this situation.
I mean, I think at minimum it muddies the water on the issues. Republicans are beating up the governor on this issue, and I think they're not going to be fully satisfied with what's happening here, and they're going to be quick to point out that it's Biden, not Evers, that's sending these troops there. But it does give Evers' side some cover to say, like, well, we're sending troops down there, and we're doing what the federal government says is needed. We're not doing this for political reasons. We're just following orders, essentially.
Yeah, and, you know, this is an issue that's more of a base issue, from what I can tell from talking to people.
Definitely.
It's like a swing voter issue. But midterms are often base elections. So
yes,
for Republicans, the more they have something to throw, whether it's critical race theory, issues on the border, crime, whatever issue they have to mentally with the base, that's
election,
something to kind of keep
election
going.
Integrity issues.
Which we will see more of those bills. Speaking of vetoes, we'll see some of those bills come in the pipe eventually and sent to the governor, and
yes,
I'm sure he's going to veto some of them.
Yes.
Actually, all of them.
Yes.
So, speaking of elections, we have an election next week. Patrick, this is our last election in Wisconsin that we have to worry about until, I believe, fall of 2022. There'll be no spring election, statewide election in Wisconsin next year. So one last kick of the cap with an election. We have special election 37th Assembly District. It's a pretty Republican district. Trump won about 54.5% there in the fall. This week we had pre-election reports. Former Republican legislative aide William Penterman outraised Dem opponent Pete Adams, a former Columbus alderman, better than 3-1, about $17,000 to $5,000. Noteworthy that the Republican Assembly Campaign Committee accounted for about $13,000, what Penniman raised, on in-kind donations for mail and online ads. We also have called late contribution reports in Wisconsin where after the close reporting period, the 2 weeks between that and the election, got a report donations of $1,000 or more. He pulled another $23,000 in late contributions. Of that, $13,000 from state GOP. He's got the conservative Americans for Prosperity doing canvassing, mailers, and digital ads, about $22,500. So, Patrick, what I've been taught in politics is if you combine a district in your favor in the numbers, money in your favor, outside help in your favor, it's usually a good combination to win an election.
Especially in this environment. There was a couple of years ago at the end of the Walker era where we had some special elections and you could kind of feel the Democratic winds starting to blow. And, you know, the Democrats won a couple of Senate seats that we might not have thought they would normally win. You're not picking up that kind of feeling right now. It does seem that, it's either status quo or pro-Republican in terms of the environment right now with Democrats controlling all of Washington. So, yeah, I think your read on the situation is pretty good.
Noteworthy that this district spans from, it goes across Columbus and Watertown and even dips into Dane County and catches mm-hmm. DeForest. Democrats want to shake off the rust of not doing doors last year. Ben Wickler, state party chair, told me he's going to personally do doors this district, which I don't often see state party chairs doing
sure.
doors in a special election for assembly, but hey, everybody's got to have a hobby, right? I do get the impression Democrats want to get back into the habit of what that voter outreach they didn't
right.
got away from. Republicans still did it
yep.
last year, and it probably helped them, probably hinders for Democrats. But this isn't a great district to make a stand in. And if you're thinking about long term, the maps we expect are going to change. Looking at the population growth in Wisconsin, Dane County has to get something more from the assembly. Now, not necessarily a full seat, but like 0.6 of a seat if you're a total math geek. So how is that going to impact these seats? And what's due for this seat? Might it be a better seat come November of next year, more with the playing
right.
in there? So that calculus goes into it. Same time, really low turnout race. Anything
yes.
can happen. I mean, the state party has a lot of money. They
it
could
does.
Have dropped $50,000 and not batted an eye, but you can kind of get why they're not really putting big effort in here.
Right. And, I mean, I think it's important to remember this is not a crucial seat. The
no.
Republicans have a huge majority in the
yes.
state assembly. You know, the Democrats barely chip into it if they manage to win the seat. So the stakes are not particularly high. That's
yeah.
kind of where it stands.
Can't forget that talk about Senate seats that Democrats went after 2018. Caleb Frostman won that first district.
6 months or yeah. whatever.
Held it for 6 months, yeah. lost it, became DW secretary. You all know how that went.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about stock picks this week, Patrick. So rising UW undergrads. So look, we all thought that there was going to be an increase in tuition.
Sure.
Right? Because the Republicans approved a budget that was going to give the regions the power to increase tuition again.
For the first time in 8 years.
They did it.
Right.
In fact, it's going to be flat again this year. Now, there are a couple things I heard that went into this. One, you're talking about coming off a pandemic in which students and parents lost jobs, you know, maybe have a difficult time paying for classes. Oh, by the way, a lot of classes were virtual, so parents were very happy about
mm-hmm.
that. So that's an issue. Number two, we're talking it's mid-July right now. You're not giving people much time to plan for an increase in tuition for the fall. So maybe a better time to do this in the spring or late winter, give them time to plan for the fall of 2022. And Republicans are going to look at this and hang it over their heads of the regions. Remember, there are five regions, I believe, who haven't been confirmed yet by the state
right.
Senate. If they went crazy with this, that might be a factor in whether they got confirmed to the Board of Regents. So it all kind of adds up to a reason why not to do it.
One trick in all of this, so that would mean if they go with a raise in the future, it would be next year, an election year.
Yes.
That could be a little dicey. Though, you know, they've talked in the past about raises of like 2%. So, you know, you're matching inflation or maybe below inflation if inflation gets high. So I don't know how toxic that is after a nine-year
yeah.
break
and
on tuition.
Something they got a little bit of a breathing room financially from Governor Evers.
Mm-hmm.
So lapses in state government are when you have to, they say, here's the money you're going to get. Now we're going to take this piece
yeah.
back. So it's basically a cut. But what happened was after all the new revenue growth came in, Evers reversed all these cuts for state agencies. It was $45 million bucks for the 2021 fiscal year for the university. go back to his budget. He wanted to freeze tuition for two more years, but fund it with $50 million.
Right.
That's the same ballpark for a dollar figure, Patrick. I can do math, even as a journalist.
Right.
They basically, that lapse is funding this freeze and giving UW a little bit of breathing room for operations. The fiscal year, it helps make this more palatable to keep the tuition as it is the next fiscal, next school year at least. Now, mixed, we have COVID. I mean, some great news, right? We averaged zero deaths for a while. Now, we're not there. We're back to one, I think. But we hit a point where we're at zero deaths in Wisconsin for COVID, which, think about where we were in November.
Right.
We're talking, like, I think averaging 80,
yeah,
something like that. Great news. We're also lagging behind the state average for vaccination, or national average for vaccinations. We're, like, around 50. They're up around 56. And the disparity in Wisconsin is stark. Dane County, 69% have at least one vaccination shot. Bayfield and Door counties, both above 60%. Then you have Clark and Taylor at 28 and 27. One of my colleagues talked to a Clark County official and said, look, it's not just COVID. There's a vaccination hesitancy here in general. They lag behind for influenza vaccinations, for childhood vaccinations. All this is happening with these variants coming in, and where you have lower rates of vaccinations, you have greater potential for a variant taking hold.
Right, and we haven't seen that happen here, fortunately, but you do run the risk that if Delta gets more of a hold in Wisconsin, that it could really hit communities like that hard.
Yeah. And so finally, following Act 21, which for those at home who aren't geeks like we are, Act 21 is an overhaul of administrative rules process. Not the sexiest thing in the world, I'm not going to lie.
Administrative rules, you know, you'd love to cover them.
But these are basically state agencies take the laws that we have and say, okay, we have to apply these laws and create rules of how things also have to regulate stuff. 10 years ago, Republicans, and I think Scott Walker, Governor Scott Walker, wanted to rein that power in and say, basically, you can't do anything unless it's expressly laid out in statute. This is the idea, especially the DNR,
yep,
of saying you can't do things about what we want you to. Well, the Supreme Court blew a giant hole in that this week with two 4-2 decisions. Basically, both cases, DNR, about one, a CAFO, they wanted to expand to a second site and add 3,000 cows, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
The DNR originally wanted to put a animal maximum for this new site,
right,
also require off-site groundwater testing. That became a lawsuit. There are also 8 high-capacity wells that were applied for, and there's this argument of you can't consider the impact, cumulative impact of these wells on the water supply when you decide with the permittum. The Supreme Court 4-2 ruling said, no, actually, DNR has this broad authority to regulate the environment that goes that isn't impacted by Act 21 because there's other statutes that give them broad authority, and broad is not in conflict with explicit, which I know,
right,
is total geekdom, but that's where we're at with the Supreme Court. What I thought was really interesting was the coalition.
Yeah.
Three liberals. We have Kurofsky, Dalit, Ann Walsh Bradley, and Annette Ziegler, the new Chief Justice.
Yes.
Minority, Rebecca Bradley, former Chief Justice Rogan Sack. Brian Hagedorn, who was the governor's chief legal counsel, this took effect, did not participate. I was expecting those 4-2 coalitions when I looked at this decision coming out on Thursday.
No, I did not expect that either. Now, we maybe should have thought that something like that was possible because 10 years ago, there was this Lake Beulah decision,
yes,
that touched on some similar issues right before Act 21 was passed. And that was a unanimous decision. So that was surprising at the time that, given the court was then very fractured, that they all came around to this view about the state's public trust doctrine and the DNR's authority to regulate the waterways of the state. So there were some signals there that the conservatives might not be in lockstep on this issue 10 years later when we come to these cases.
Excellent point. And Ziegler
big
was on that court back in 2011.
She was. And most interestingly, we didn't hear a word directly from her. She joined the majority opinions,
yes,
but she didn't write a concurring opinion. She didn't dissent in part, so we don't really know her specific thoughts other than what she signed on to that Dalit and Kurofsky wrote.
Yes. Well, thank you for joining us this week, Patrick. Thank you for watching. I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Patrick Barley.
That's Rewind for the week of July 9th. Have a great weekend.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.